Welcome to the Good Hard Story Podcast, where we believe that the good story and the hard story can be the exact same story. I'm Catherine Wolf, and I'm a stroke survivor, a speaker, an author, and co-founder of Hope Heals. Tune in here every week for conversations about wholeheartedly living in a good hard story. Join me in this joyful rebellion to the darkness where we discover the treasures hidden in our hurting. What a gift it is to be coming to you from Hope Heals Camp, the back porch of my cabin, with the amazing Dr. Kurt Thompson.
Woo-hoo.
And the truly incomparable Jay Wolf.
Wow. Right on.
Yes.
Thanks for that.
So glad you are both
and
with
you.
Me today on the Good Hard Story Podcast. Thank you for coming.
Happy to be here. I'm thrilled to be here. I'm just so happy to be with you guys.
This and also great. On a back porch. Only yeah. lightly sweating.
I know, only lightly.
Only a little.
Oh, please. It's like cool
sweat.
For Alabama right now.
It really is.
And it's kind great. Of glorious back here if you look around. It's magical, I think.
Yeah. It's really beautiful.
It's old growth forest all over, like pretty much as far as you can see.
Yeah.
This is actually my favorite spot. Is this back porch.
Yeah. No wonder.
The forest totally. Bathe.
It's no a national kidding.
Forest. It's, oh, it is?
Yeah.
Really?
We're right on the edge of a national forest,
oh, wow.
So that's why beautiful. It's so beautiful and
makes
developed.
Sense.
Right on.
And, so, Dr. Kurt, last year you were a pastor to our campers.
Mm.
This year you are a pastor to our volunteers. And throughout our friendship, which I think now would be 11 years of
yeah,
knowing
that's right.
you,
yeah.
11 years,
this summer.
You have pastored these two, Jane Catherine Wolf.
Well, and you've befriended me, too,
well,
which is, I mean, this
you're
gift
welcome.
Has been.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This gift is.
Lots of love all
I'm
around.
Trying, I'm trying to express
he's
my gratitude. Is he always like this?
He's trying.
Yes, yes, he is.
You want to receive, please. Go ahead.
Very true. Anyway.
Anyway.
Dr. Kurt's words,
sorry.
Thinking,
oh,
heart,
gracious.
His. Unbelievable study and research coming around interpersonal neurobiology. Is that right?
You got
is that a question?
I did. Yes. It's a legitimate question.
It is. Totally.
Just, I mean, you're deep
and
incredible. And the.
I want my wife to hear those words
yes.
over and over again.
Back for her.
But
we
that,
love Phyllis
that deeply too. Informed my thinking post-stroke and getting to be a part of our glorious seasons weekends together starting in 2012 through 2018.
Which was a spiritual retreat weekend that
which
we were all part of.
Which was a spiritual retreat weekend we were all a part of on
yep.
the speaking team.
Contributing
and
to.
And those moments of you really sharing and speaking in conjunction with us sharing and speaking, really very newly doing that, were so what the Lord was using to really help heal us in a lot of ways. Just to, I mean, it's really crazy that I have this neuro issue. And then the Lord places us with someone who studies this kind of thing with his life in the intersection of Christian faith. And that's our heart. And here we were. So,
and can I say,
glorious.
I mean, I have to rewind just a second because it's worth noting and remembering together 11 years ago when we met Kurt and,
oh, yeah.
and we're in this community for quite a while. It was a good, I mean, we did 15, I think, of those weekends over. Five or six years.
Yeah.
Well,
they were amazing.
The beginning, though, is that we were not on that team. We were not part of that event.
No.
That's
it
right.
It was literally the 11th hour. Someone dropped out, and we were the backups. And we were the backup singers that got a chance to take center stage. I mean,
it's
worth noting some of the most transformational invitations we've received were not the ones that were originally meant to be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's how we met was a sort of, again, filling a void, filling a loss that was there. That was a deep loss. And we got to kind of come in and we we could never have imagined what that community in that time would have offered us.
Right. Well, and yeah,
it's amazing.
I'm struck by the work of the Holy Spirit that we typically only tend to see through the rearview mirror. But that is taking even hard moments like that for the team where, you know, a member drops out. And then what happened in those few weeks and then the years that followed. And as I was saying earlier before Jay so rudely interrupted me, when I said how much my life has been shaped by you guys and feeling loved. Being loved,
yeah,
in ways that have been real, and that all of our brokenness is just brought to the table, and the Spirit is given the opportunity to do what only God imagines. And so in 11 years, I just can't even imagine. It's just so like the whole notion of imagining that we would be sitting here on this back porch in this.
Right,
luscious old growth forest. Recording this together is like you can't make this up.
I know.
Only God makes this up.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's a wonder.
I feel the same way.
Yeah.
Thank you for making the trek to this place to be with us. You have given us your wisdom and your love and your presence, and we're so grateful. And we can't really imagine feeling how we feel about our story and our life and the work and the calling on our lives without having you as a thread through that. So we're,
this
so grateful.
Just dawning on me, and you both may have known this all along, but I think 2012 was the year I dramatically broke my leg. On the first season's weekend and could not attend. And from there, it was almost like a shift in me. Something happened in that next, I would say, few years of probably your teaching of just the whole concept of re-narrating. I was just had never really thought much about. The idea of the re-narration of the story, telling the accurate story of one's life and what's happening. And I just, the whole notion of you come into the world looking for somebody looking for you, the whole notion of remembering your future, just these powerful thoughts I'd never thought. And you gave me a whole language to think of my story differently. And that is what we are so called to do, is take our broken heart and think about it differently to get through it.
Right.
And I didn't have that tool in my backpack yet. And now I do. Now I think differently about my story.
Right.
And so much of that comes from you informing me that that was possible, giving me an imagination for it.
Yeah. Well, and I think you use that word imagination it comes from the word image. And this whole notion that we are God's image bearers. And I'll speak for myself. I don't wake up in the morning and the first thing I think like, oh my gosh, my role is to bear and restore God's image today. That's my role. This is from Andy Crouch's work. I mean, he's like, that's the calling. That's the only calling that we have. Everything else can be taken away.
Yeah.
But it can't be taken away that we are to bear and restore God's image. And so I can't know my story without my seeing it through your eyes. I have to imagine something. If I'm going to imagine a different story, it's going to have to be imaged to me from outside of me, because left to my own accord, like I'm going to tell the same broken story over and over and over again that only continues to kind of create more pain and trauma, and like, that I'm going to like inflict upon myself,
right? Continually traumatizing yourself with your story. Yeah,
it's not just that you inform me differently. It's that you image something to me differently, like with your very life, with, so it's not just information. It is the late nights we spend talking. It's the tears shed. Yes, it is the stories that we tell, but it's the stories we tell in our embodied places where we sense and see and feel the vulnerability of each other that allows, when I am in the presence of your vulnerabilities, it allows my vulnerabilities to come into the room. It invites them into the room. And those are the places where my healing is most desperately needed.
Absolutely.
And so it's like the Spirit does this work of bringing our vulnerability into this space. And in some respects, like it is a kind of, it's a recap. It's a redo of the end of Genesis 2, where the man and his wife were naked and unashamed. This different, right? We're different. We have different people. And we are naked. We are vulnerable. And when shame is not in the room, that is when new creative acts of great durability and beauty are first really given birth. And that's what, like, look, hope heals. It's real. And I think of that time that we spent together with Seasons Weekend. I mean, it created opportunity for me as well to, you know, to be able to do things and think things. And another book came out of that time, but while we were there, that in many respects was
the soul of shit.
Yeah. That was given life because of the work that we did together in those years together.
Oh, it's beautiful.
That's really powerful. You know what, Kurt, always has struck me about your work that has translated to our work and life and this place, and it's all kind of informed every bit, is the notion that when we tell our story to an empathetic listener, it changes how we feel about our story. And I have gotten to practice that an insane amount of times now. I tell my story a whole lot. And to a lot of empathetic listeners, probably some not, but most, by and large, are empathetic listeners, honestly.
Yeah.
And I think it has changed how I feel about my story. And that comes from your teaching. So the Lord was using your teaching to teach me to teach others. And in the process, help heal this. I mean, that's powerful.
It raises this notion that we've been talking about. In our work, in our practice, we have these groups called confessional communities that we do work with, and we're beginning to talk about what I call the relational physics of being in the room with many people. This notion that our trauma and our shame easily takes up residence and is embedded in our neural networks. And because of the isolation that we often have, we are kind of reactivating it over and over and over again in the privacy of our own mind, often before we go to sleep and when we wake up, and all the things that we're doing to reinforce these things. And so what we really need is the opportunity, and we sometimes think, if you tell your story one time, then it's told. But to your point about telling it multiple times, it is the same thing that happens anytime we remember anything. If I do my flashcards, learning my multiplication tables, I have to practice them over and over and over and over again. And there comes a point in time when they become permanently embedded for me, but not just because I'm magically smart, but because I'm practicing over and over and over again. And if I am willing to tell my story over time, multiple times to people, and especially if I'm telling that story to a group of people at one time, you essentially have the body of Jesus in the room. The collective power of life. If you've got eight brains in the room, what one receives and what they receive from that story is very different than if I'm just telling one person that story. And if I'm going to enter into that storytelling over and over and over again, it creates the opportunity for me to have a very different experience of the story. We're not talking about changing the facts on the ground.
Right.
But we are changing what I perceive about the meaning that I make of it, what I sense and image and feel and so forth, because now the facts are being shaped by a very differently felt empathic response by this group of people who I take with me into that story as I tell it. And then I take those people with me into my day-to-day life, which means that they are in the room when that old story narrative wants to come in and invade and affect this that's happening. And I think that that really also plays a pretty powerful role in terms of one of the topics I think that we want to talk about today when it comes to the issue of suffering.
Can I tag one other question on that? We talk about being an empathetic listener, even in the space of our camp setting here in your practice. Put handles on that for us so we can understand when we get the role of being the listener of another person's story, how can we best be an empathetic listener, create this kind of transformation?
Well, one thing I think it's important to know is that we sometimes think of empathy as kind of like breathing. It's just a thing that you do or your eye color, like you have brown eyes or blue eyes. Like it's just a thing that you have or you don't have. And in fact, it's a skill that we can learn. We can begin to, with practice and intention, learn it. But we can't, we also like to say that every intentional behavior that humans enact are always mimicked. For me to enact an intentional behavior, I have to have seen it or received it from someone else. Empathy is no different. I can't just make it up unless I've witnessed it or unless I've received that. So that's the first thing. If I'm going to be an empathic listener, I have to be someone who's received it in some way, shape, or form. And so we talk about empathy as being my capacity to have some sense, some feeling of what the other person is feeling. And so if they're really sad, if they're really angry, if there are a number of things, if they're really embarrassed, I will sense myself sensing that. Our listeners will kind of know what that's like. You're in a room where someone else is feeling something and you start to feel something. And so, first of all, being aware that you are feeling something and that what you're feeling is not just your own feeling, but it is also your shared feeling of what the other person is experiencing in that moment. The next thing is to being empathic is our tendency, just to be aware that if you're upset, if you're distressed, and I start to feel it, I don't necessarily like that. And so my first move might be to do whatever I need to do to help you stop feeling bad.
Make it stop.
So that I can stop feeling bad.
Of course.
And so to be empathic means I'm willing to simply be present with you. And this is where some of the hardest work, and that we can practice and become practiced at being comfortable with my own discomfort, with my own sadness, my own anxiety. If you were to say, I'm really anxious about something.
Yes.
And so we have to restrain. I have to restrain my impulse to want to tell you what to do, to tell you what I think about it. I have to restrain that. At some point, if you really want to know what I think, you can ask me. But I want to restrain that impulse. And there are a couple of really practical, tactical questions that we can ask. And the first one is, we don't make this up. We're not telling people things that we don't really believe are true. But typically, if I'm feeling something like that, I can imagine that whatever you're feeling, it's not easy. It's hard. And I can say, oh my gosh, that sounds really hard. I really get that. And that sounds really hard. And that's the first thing that gives a person a sense, the speaker in this case, that they're not by themselves. And we like to say it's not good for a man to be alone. All of our anxiety is ultimately driven by our primary sense that we're in isolation with whatever it is that I'm feeling. It's not just that I'm anxious because I can't do something or I'm not going to be good enough at something or I'm going to fail at something. It is, if I fail, I will be left alone.
Yeah.
It's all about being alone. And if I say, oh my gosh, that sounds really hard, I'm not just validating their emotional state, I am joining with them. And the moment their mind senses that, if I sense that you're with me, it lowers my anxiety. And it means that even though my sadness or the event that I'm talking about hasn't changed, my anxiety about my sadness is reduced because you are with me.
Yes.
And then the second thing that you can say, just as the second practical question, and of course, this is tough for us because we're already working hard just to be with whatever it is we're already feeling, but to say, I'd love for you to tell me more. Tell me more about what you're feeling. Because how many of us in the middle of our trauma, in the middle of our grief, our rage, have been given the space to speak any of it, let alone for us to say something. And then they say, tell me more. Really? You mean you can take it? You can tolerate me? You can, and
I want to hear more. And in so doing, you're not just helping them tell their story. You are joining with them. And as you literally are more connected to them, the story as they tell it is now being told with someone else being in the room, in their mind, literally. And the story of aloneness that is the ultimate problem that they have is now gradually being changed. Mm-hmm. And this is what we would say is a cornerstone of what Paul's writing about in Romans 12 when he says, therefore, don't be conformed to this world. And the way the world operates, which is to isolate you.
Of course.
And to have you believe that, no, you're alone with your story, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And in this way, our minds are renewed, but important to remember, when he writes that, when he's transformed by the renewing of your mind, that word your is plural. Mm. I can read that and think, okay, somehow I, Kurt, have to do this renewal on my own. I got to figure out a way to do this. And Paul's words are explicitly, no, you as a community.
You all, yeah.
Y'all.
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 Right? We say y'all.
Y'all.
Here on this Alabama porch, we y'all. Say y'all.
Yeah.
Y'all be renewed, which means that renewal of my story necessarily requires your presence. Mm-hmm. And I think, Catherine J., I mean, if there's anything that hope heals is about, it is about withness.
Mm-hmm. It really is, yes. Right.
Mm-hmm. It is about being with, it is about presence, it is about your vulnerably naming your story, which if anybody is honest enough, your story is my story. And my story, it may not be a stroke, but there is something about my life that has been stroked, if you will.
Absolutely.
And I have lots of other things at my disposal to help protect me from paying attention to it.
Yeah.
And yours is a way of being with in a way that enables people's lives to be transformed because it's taking place in a community. Mm. And so like what we're doing here at camp, so many of the folks that come don't have that experience most days of their lives.
Yes.
And for you to say, it's not just that your lives are okay, but that your lives are what's going to help our lives. Mm-hmm. Like we are going to do this together, mm-hmm. right? We're not just helping folks who are troubled.
Yeah.
No, we are troubled.
Right.
Right.
Like we are doing, the Spirit of God is doing the work in the camp and we are all participating.
Yeah.
And I'm just grateful to be part of it.
Mm.
Wow.
Well, likewise.
Early on, you told us that the hours and hours of therapy for a year mm-hmm. are almost like comparable to a just immersive experience mm-hmm. out of your routine of a camp context mm-hmm. as far as processing grief, trauma, all of it. It's the kind of the same effect of a whole lot of therapy. Is that right?
Mm. Well, there's no question that this kind of concentrated time is a game changer.
It
for
is.
People. Not only because of what happens while people are here, but I love the emphasis that you're placing on like these roundtable conversations and the squads that are together, all of this very intentional, thoughtful purpose of seeing people and allowing people to be seen that necessarily gives them an experience, but the experience is sharp enough. And I use that word sharp kind of neurologically. It is novel enough. It is acute enough for me that I remember
it's
it.
A memory,
And so it creates a memory to which I can return over and over and over again. And that memory is made more durable by virtue of my constructing it in the context of community. Most of the time when folks go to camp, kids, right? Camp is for kids most
for
of the time.
Yeah, for sure.
And the kids, when they come home, in our culture, they will each child will have their own, they talk about their experience, and certainly they have friends and so forth. But not always is there that much emphasis placed on what's happening collectively for people. Mm-hmm. Like, is the deal. Mm-hmm. It mm-hmm. is the big deal. And I love how the work that you do at Hope Heals is this cadenced rhythmic movement back and forth between, not unlike, you know, breathing or your cardiac rhythm, right? You have systole and you have diastole, this sense of like, oh, we have time for individual reflection, but then they're back in their community and they're back individual, this connection back and forth and back and forth that is a way to really substantively help memory be encoded. Because I'm not, because, you know, we like to say that I pay attention to things that are novel. And once I've paid attention to something for a little while that was novel 10 minutes ago, I stop paying attention to it. It's no longer interesting to me unless I put, you know, active work into paying attention to it. And if I'm moving rhythmically back and forth throughout all the things that we're doing, if I'm moving from individual experience to community connection, it helps my novelty, the novelty part of my mind's activity that helps me encode and remember this time that much more effectively.
Oh, that's good.
I definitely.
Who knew? I think it was.
Yeah, who knew? Cool.
It was an accident, but I'm glad it. I'm glad it's going to stick.
A happy novelty. Accident.
I think about the story of, much of camp is a happy accident.
Yeah.
All of this, it feels like a happy accident.
For sure.
What I was thinking about, that when you're talking about the story of suffering in particular, and we want to talk about the work you've been doing around this more, the story, it's hard enough to tell a story about our life and about ourselves to another person, to a group.
Yeah.
When your story involves suffering that will create greater discomfort, greater othering, greater sense of, I don't even want to hear that. It's too much.
Yeah.
And I'm going to anticipate that it's too much for anybody to hold, or that they can't relate anyway, or that you're relativizing it in some way to make it either too much to bear or it's Catherine's stroke was a different category, so she don't want to hear about my suffering in this way, whatever. The story of suffering further isolates us, which further keeps us in suffering in different form. And so how do we find a way out of that cycle? And that's what your most recent work has kind of been about. And we're so grateful for your work on shame and beauty and story and all of these things. Why did you want to look into suffering? We've written a book called Suffer Strong.
Good point.
Real page turner.
Yep.
I do think, but also people are like, not that one. Sorry.
No.
Good idea. But even the word just strikes.
It's off-putting.
Something.
Right. Did all. Your publisher tell you bad choice?
well, no, but there's a story. There is a story. Let me just say that I have utterly loved my experience with my publisher, including the story I'm going to tell, but I would say that when it came to the design, they brought a cover to me that we eventually chose that I just utterly love. And everything about the publishing experience with Zondervan or the folks has just been fabulous. You hear me front end loading my comments.
Yes,
with this, which is and it is all true. And one of the experiences was that as they then got closer to making final decisions, the marketing folks came back and said, you know, the cover looks a little dark.
Yeah.
But the title is The Deepest Place, Suffering and the Formation of Hope. That's the title. Yeah. But the cover, if you look at the cover fits. And their concern, and I understand this, their concern was we want the hope.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And my response was exactly. And this is the problem. And I write in the opening pages of the book that if I were going to pick up a book on suffering, the reason I want to read a book is because I want to read on the pages how it is that I no longer have to suffer. I want a way to get out of this.
Of course.
I don't want better ideas about suffering, which is just true about my experience as being a Christian, right? I have my own ideas for Jesus about how my formation should be taking place.
Yeah.
And most of them are not his. And so there is a sense that even in our longing to talk about suffering, I want to do it in a way that can alleviate me from it. I am like one of Job's friends. I could be any one of them at any given time.
For sure.
But what really struck me, there has been a progression in the four books that I've written. There's been a progression from talking about neuroscience and formation, and then going from that to talking about what makes it tough, and shame plays this huge role, and what is then really a response to shame that we want, and that's about beauty. And then what we discover is that even as we're doing all that work, it struck me many months ago, we were sitting in one of these confessional communities, and one of the patients in the group who's been working really, really hard over 25 years, we had really painful stuff, and is like in no way is the same place that she was 25 years ago when I first began to work with her. But things continue to happen in her life, And this person has other family members in her life who continue to behave badly.
Right. Mm.
And it's like, it continues. Yeah. The wound is continually right. struck.
Yeah. Yes.
And her, like, why is it taking me this long? Why can, mm-hmm. that the suffering continues? Mm. There
There's
is this
no
sense,
quota.
Right. In the book, I talk about we suffer for three reasons, general reasons. Mm-hmm. We suffer because of things that have happened to us.
Right.
We suffer mostly because of things that we do to ourselves, mm-hmm. which includes the story that I tell myself. So even in the example of, I don't know that I could tell Catherine my story because, you know, it doesn't work like, and I want to, and I don't, or I don't want, I want to protect other people. Mm-hmm. What I'm really still doing is I'm protecting myself.
Yeah.
It's what I'm really doing. Protecting myself from the disappointment that, oh, this isn't going to work, or you're going to be overwhelmed, or I'm going to be too much. And what do I do? In that very moment of deciding not to share my story with you, I reinforce my own suffering.
Yeah.
Mm.
And this is one of the primary ways that trauma operates. We think something happens to us in 2008, mm-hmm. and then evil just counts on us taking it from there.
Mm.
Okay. And I just repeat things in my head, and wow. probably like, I'm not this, I'm not that. Like, evil doesn't, just like in the third chapter of Genesis, evil has a conversation with a woman, you never hear from the serpent again.
Wow.
Just backs out of the car. He doesn't need to do anything. And this sense, then, if I'm left in this place, then I continue to create in my own life experience my pain that is in isolation and has no contact mm-hmm. with anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And in the book, we talk about how, you know, suffering is the experience of pain over time. That's what we talk about, the experience of pain over time. Pain is what happens, the sense of pain, the stress that I have. Suffering is how I respond to this. And the degree to which I am unable to mark a timeline for how long this is going to last is how suffering is going to, like, create a problem for me. And so then I don't just experience pain. I begin to tell a story about my suffering, included that, like, oh, well, I'll be too much for you, or you will be uninterested in what I have to do. And certainly, after I've told you my story one time or five times, right. at some point, you're going to get tired of me. That becomes part of the story that I tell.
Right.
It is also part of my suffering, which is why, again, we'll bring it back to Hope Heals and the camp in particular, which is why the whole notion of, you know, and I think about my patient that day, many, many months ago, what she was really saying was not just, why is it taking me so long? What she was saying is, when are you all going to leave the room? When are you all going to decide, why can't you get it together? When are you all going to decide, it's been long enough? And this is why we would say that the key, one of the key elements of suffering has to do with the degree of isolation that I have and my sense that this is never going to end. And what community does, it brings me into a place where I am, I become, as we like to say, more securely attached.
Mm-hmm.
Seen, soothed, safe, secure. And that exposes me to the glory of God as John's gospel writes about it. Not glory as in, oh, like this forest, but glory as of the Son and the Father, this love relationship, this sense of like God walks in the room and suddenly you become the most important target in his crosshairs. Mm. This sense that he wants the opportunity to come and hold your face in front of everybody else. And that sense of Jesus being loved by God and God being loved by Jesus in this way, this portion of glory, if this is what I am sitting with, it begins to transform my interpretation, my perception of the pain that I have, which then leads in Romans 5:3, the book really looks at, it's an interpersonal neurobiological take on the first five verses of Romans chapter 5. Mm-hmm. And many of us are familiar with that third verse, for we, not only this, but we glory in our sufferings. We are going to pay attention to glory. I'm going to remember being loved even in my suffering, because in so doing, if I'm continually being loved by you in my suffering, that will help me persevere. I'm going to keep practicing, 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 because you're not leaving the room and I'm not leaving the room. And if I keep practicing, it means I develop durable character. I develop ways of being in the world that are surprising, even to me and to others, because there is this suffering, and yet I'm doing something else, this character that leads to hope. And what is hope? We like to talk from a neurobiology standpoint. Hope is about future state. Mm-hmm. I'm anticipating a future, but my future is something that I remember. Mm-hmm. It is something that I construct based on all the series of here and now interactions that I have with mm-hmm. you when you're not leaving the room. And when you're not leaving the room, I begin to collect an awareness that life is a life in which, no matter how hard the pain is, nobody's leaving the room. Yeah. And I anticipate that's going to be the future. And that becomes my hope. And that hope continues to resource my capacity to continue to persevere. But I'm doing this and only in the context of community, which again is everything that this organization and your work in the camp is about.
Romans 5, I think in our maybe modern, Western, or maybe just always, and just in our human bent, it feels like a formula that we suffer. And then, of course, you get to persevere.
And you get character. And you get character. And you get hope.
And it feels, or it can be perceived in some ways like a ladder or like sort of this status
right.
you achieve. And then when the reality strikes that this is a till death cycle.
That's right.
There, I think, is disenchantment, or there's just, wait, I thought I had already done the steps.
It's my patient.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
And so now what? Right.
Right.
And so, I mean, how do we reframe some of these spiritual sort of, these age-old sort of ideas that we've heard for a long time?
Right.
Into maybe, how do we re-narrate some of those into this opportunity to create, it's a memory, and create this future state that we then get to bring to the present moment of our lives and story in this cyclical way, in this muscle memory way. Maybe, you know what, I have hope, and this feels beautiful. But wow, this new thing happened out of the blue.
Right.
And now I'm back to suffering, and I don't know what to do.
Right.
But maybe we will remember a little easier next time. But how do we reframe that?
Yeah, well, I think, I mean, one thing that that struck me about this passage is that we're pretty familiar with, and I was pretty familiar with that third verse, but we, there are two verses that come before it. Mm-hmm. And in the book, we unpack why those verses, even from a relational and brain science standpoint, are so crucially important. Mm-hmm. We talk about faith, justification. We talk about being at peace with God, for instance. Mm-hmm. One of the things that suffering does is that it unveils the parts of me that still categorically believe I'm at war with God. Mm-hmm. And we all have parts of us. Like, yes, I believe, help thou my unbelief, the parts of me that are still at war. And the whole progression of faith and justification and being at peace with God, that leads to glory. Glory in this way that we're talking about, not glory of in God's grandeur, but this element of glory that if God is just loving us in the middle of these spaces, leads us to recognize that the mission is about practicing being loved. The mission is not about ridding ourselves of suffering. Mm-hmm. Part of what we have to do is part of our formation, part of teaching, it's important to recognize that we have been far more powerfully formed by the Enlightenment than we have been by the gospel. And the Enlightenment tells us that we are ever progressing, ever getting more and more and more perfect, which means suffering should eventually go away.
Yeah.
And it is a relatively new idea in the history of mankind.
Right.
Yes.
And we have to say to people, that's not the real world in which we live. It has never been the real world. Mm-hmm. We have to disabuse people of that notion and to say the real world we live in, like, look around. Like, it just keeps coming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the question is, how will we learn to allow ourselves to be ever more deeply loved in the middle of that? We were in this week in camp, in my role, we're talking about John 11. Lazarus is raised from the dead, but as it turns out, like, you know, he's going to get to die again. Like, it's not the answer. It's not just about somebody being raised from the dead. It is about people learning to be receptive to Jesus loving them in the face of all the other incoming data that is telling them, you should be afraid. Nothing, you can't really be loved until the very last day. And Jesus is saying, no, I am the resurrection right here. Pay attention to me. See me seeing you. Let me be with you where you are. And let that be what carries the day. When you get to Pentecost, it becomes clear, like, we are to be that for each other. Mm-hmm. We are to be with each other what Jesus was with Mary, what he tried to be with Martha. Martha had a harder time with that. But, like, I got the parts of me that are Martha, right? It's not like she's, like, the villain here.
Mm-hmm. For
right?
sure, yes.
I am Martha, right? And this notion of practicing, every time it happens, bringing to those by whom I'm being deeply known my suffering, and recognizing that this is part of how we are formed. And in so doing, the whole notion of what suffering even is becomes something that God transforms for us. I change the notion even of what I imagine it to be like because I'm being so transformed by you. You, the body, the blood of Jesus. You, the voice, the eye contact, the embrace. You, the ones who say, you know, Kurt, tell me more about that. You seem like you're having a hard time allowing me to love you in that particular area because there might be a part of me that is, like, literally having a hard time allowing you to get close to me because I'm afraid that when you do, that's going to be the last straw and you're going to leave the room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for just giving us language, vision, imagination, and practice.
Yeah.
Over and over again.
Yeah.
I can't wait to get this book out in the world. And it's not mine, but I'm that excited about it.
It might as well be.
Well, it might as well be.
I'll see what my publishers do.
This thinking is helping me a lot.
Don't worry, I don't
need a commission.
Okay.
But actually, there is some words that we wrote in the book because we endorsed it and are huge fans of all the work stemming back to Anatomy of the Soul, the OG Kurt Thompson book, all the way to this one. So we're a big fan.
And what's been fun, too, with camp, especially having you come the past year and now, is to introduce you.
Mm.
Plenty of folks know you, but many don't. And just to know that this will be the beginning of a new way of looking at their life and story. And it's really to see the full circle nature, to see the hoping it forward nature of Paul talks about us giving this connection to the God that has given us comfort and hope away to those who need it. I mean, Kurt, you are
doing
this conduit to us, and the cycle continues and the practice continues.
Yes.
Okay. I got to say one more thing. I got to say one more thing.
Yes.
Yeah. And this will be the last thing I'll say, unless you ask me another question. Okay. And here's the thing. You don't have to be a follower of Jesus to be captivated by other people's suffering. Mm-hmm. Suffering captures everybody's attention. Mm. And everybody expects that suffering is a thing. Like, you know, Western philosophy, we want to eradicate it. We're gonna come up with a way to solve the problem, right? This kind of principled way of progress. Mm-hmm. Or in Eastern philosophical tradition, we're gonna just kind of live as if it's not there. Mm-hmm. The only story in the world that actually sees suffering as having purpose is the Bible. And what that means is that when we suffer in the way we are called to suffer together, right? Not just like each of us as siloed individuals, but when we share in each other's and therefore Jesus' sufferings, this is what the world sees. Mm. And the suffering becomes the gospel to the world.
Yeah.
It's really hard for people to look at how people love one another in the middle of their suffering. They're not just being empathic. They emerge with hope. Yeah. Like, as your whole ministry has been, they emerge with hope, and you're like, what the heck?
Yeah.
Like we don't have any category for this. You're right. You don't.
Yes.
Because there is only one category for this, and it's Jesus. That's the only category. And I think this is the other thing is what evil meant for harm. God will take and use for good, even using it, the very thing that evil wants to use, and God will say, I'm going to even use it to redeem the world and even redeem the suffering itself in such a way that others will see how we love one another in the middle of our suffering and say, I need to have more of that.
Yeah, yeah. May it be so. Wow.
Yeah, right on.
Oh, well, I can't help but say that years ago we heard a missionary that was doing missions in other parts of the world say that in America in today, you will find Christians who gather and pray away suffering. That everybody's like, diagnosis comes, got to get out the suffering. And that in other parts of the world, Christians gather and they bring their suffering and ask the people around them to hold it with them, to pray that they are faithful in it, that they suffer well and bring glory to God and point people to Jesus because of the suffering.
Yep, right
so
on.
They are engaging it so differently.
Right.
And you just made that point. And I tell that story about the missionary a whole lot, and you've just given it a whole new insight for me. And if Kurt Thompson said it, I know it's got to be true. So no more missionary story. Now it's Kurt Thompson's head.
He's changing the sermon illustration.
Hello.
Look out.
Look out.
My new sermon illustration
is
here.
Scary if you've made it.
I'm just kidding, but that's powerful. Yes.
Well, we love you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Tell us where everybody can find you, because there's a lot of resources that are so helpful.
Well, I think, you know, the thing that has that I'm hearing that people have really enjoyed is I have a podcast called The Being Known Podcast with friends of ours.
Yeah. It's incredible.
Amy Chellis. So The Being Known Podcast that you get on Apple and iTunes or wherever else we get.
Spotify.
Spotify, yeah. Yep. That's one. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. But I also have a website, KurtThompsonMD.com. And then I have this little nonprofit called the Center for Being Known, which we're really excited about because it's providing training for folks in forming these confessional communities where a lot of this work around suffering is taking place. And so those are, I think those are some ways. I think I'm trying to think like, what will my marketing person, what might.
Also, you have a book that people can buy.
Oh, that's right. There's,
on Amazon and anywhere.
There's a book. Books there's a book. Right. That's right.
Yes. Yes.
Everybody go buy them.
Right. They're,
buy
they're,
all of them.
They're for, yeah. Anatomy of the Soul, The Soul of Shame, The Soul of Desire, and then The Deepest Place, Suffering and the Formation of Hope. It's coming at the end of August.
Life changing.
So, yeah.
All of them.
Yeah.
As we close this episode, we ask every guest to answer this question. As in the most brief way possible. Yeah. What is good in your story? What is hard in your story? And how do you live with the tension of both today in your story, Kurt Thompson?
I could probably say there are a lot of things that I could answer that would answer that question. I'll just say this. In the last several months, I have become acutely acquainted with the degree to which I'm a person of great envy. I mean, like, it is just everywhere. And at this, and so at one level, I, you know, could tell a whole story about that because it's so tied up in shame. And at the same time that you're like, suddenly, oh my gosh, like there's the enemy and the enemy's everywhere. You're like, oh, now I know exactly where the enemy is. Now I know what the work is that I actually have to do that I've been kind of blind to and separate from for most of my life. And it's tempting to think, well, why didn't I know about this when I was 20? And there is a sense in which I think I'm increasingly, and I become aware of things as I am able to become aware of them. And not shaming myself or condemning myself for learning this now. Now the question is, what am I going to do about that?
Yeah.
And so I think there you have it.
Yeah.
That's helpful.
That's
and vulnerable.
Very vulnerable. But Kurt, you just said what's hard in your story. Probably good to have that revelation, so good and hard, but what's good in your story that suffer from hard?
Well, I mean, I don't mean to like whatever, but like our friendship.
That's like, I'm here.
Like, I could name lots of things. I mean, like the list of things that are good are endless. But I mean, here we are, and so why not say it? Like, I love that. I'm just I don't deserve my life, our friendship is no small part of that. About why that's true, and so thank you. It's great to do this.
That's a perfect answer, Kurt. Thank you so much. And likewise, what a gift to have this moment. I'm overwhelmed in this place with Kurt Thompson and the amazing Leah Case over there and the incomparable Jay Wuff. What a blessing to come to you from camp. And we will see you / you'll hear me / whatever next week. God bless you. May you go out and live your good hard story with courage and know you are not alone. You are with an army of joyful rebels doing the work of living this out while we are here. God bless you.
Amen.
Thank you for joining us on the Good Hard Story podcast. To learn more about what we are doing, follow us on Instagram @ Hope Heals. Check out all things Hope Heals at hopeheals.com. Don't forget to subscribe to this wherever you get podcasts, and please feel free to share this episode with somebody who needs to hear it. Good Hard Story Podcast is a production of Good Hard Story, LLC. It is produced by Leah Case and Mary Austin Hall. And I am your fearless and fabulous host, Catherine Wolf. Come back and join us every week where we believe that the good story and the hard story can be the very same story. We are with you and for you, friends.